Good afternoon. You are listening to 91.9 FM, WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin. This is the Heart of Wellness show with hosts Drs. Paul and Paula Grenier. Today's guest is Rob Danielson, who is a potentially impacted landowner in the town of Stark, and he has been outspoken on the 765 transmission line project that is potentially bearing down upon us. And we are excited to have Rob here with us today. You know, there's always somebody in any thing or thing that has to be that person who helps lead and inform and get people, you know, woke up a little bit, right? You know, kind of like the canary in the coal mine for us, right? And so we appreciate you being one of those folks who are kind of trying to bring awareness to this project. We all blissfully live here in the Driftless region and are grateful for our rural life. We can live and lead. And then all of a sudden we hear about this thing that might be just messing that up a bit. So I appreciate that you're out there trying to just, you know, maybe rally the troops is another word we could say, but just informing your neighbors countywide and around of what this impactfully could mean. So we really appreciate your energy putting in here. I know what that takes to lead that. So thanks for being here. Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me, Paul and Paula. Just a little more background about my origin in this interest area.
Yes.
Some listeners might recall that 2010, when the Badger Coulee 345 kV transmission line was proposed, I was lucky enough to be asked by my town chairman at the time, Keith Ashley Wright and Brad Steinmetz, to create an energy committee amongst local constituents to study the proposal. And since then, I've found that the information is very important for people to learn about. And I attended utility planning meetings for about 8 years constantly, as well as other proposals.
Where does that happen? Utility planning.
The American Transmission Company has a planning process that they go through. It's a stakeholder process. It mostly is the engineers for the utilities that they serve, but it's open to the public if you inquire. And okay. So I sat in on these meetings for a representative for the town of Stark for many years, and I learned a lot of information about regional utility planning, processes of the whole kind of, if you will, motives behind the utilities expansion interests. And then there were other projects that came along in Wisconsin, and it was very evident that this was a very big learning curve for these communities to climb. So I've just basically been answering my phone, answering with questions, and trying to help communities come up to speed all across Wisconsin for about 14 years now. And when this Dairyland announced in their little blurb inside of our Vernon Electric Cooperative magazine that they wanted to build a 765 kV line, I was shocked first, and then second of all, realized the seriousness that this was not a casual little possibility that was actually proposed.
And you know, like, I read all those blurbs and I get little newsletters like that, but I would have had no, like, oh, they're doing something. But like you, your eyes are like, ding, 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 765, right? I'm just imagining the different impact when you read that compared to most people, just like, oh, okay. Again, canary in the coal mine, you're thinking, going.
Well, that, are you saying, Paul?
Yeah, it's good. These things are humongous, right? I mean, there's none of them in the southeast or southwest, right, of Wisconsin?
Right. There's none of them in Wisconsin. There are none in the upper Midwest except for a pilot project that is now running across south of Chicago. But these are the old classic, we call them lattice style, the woven steel structures. that have four legs, most cases, and big concrete pedestals. And yeah, there's a Paul's looking at the illustration. Yeah. And the they, you know, range from 150 to 200 feet high. This particular one would carry two circuits, six wires. The existing transmission lines in the area, which the developers are instructed by state statute to first look at in terms of siting new transmission structure, those existing, you know, lower voltage lines, we have some that are 69,000 volts, just to give you an idea. We have some that are 161,000 volts. Those H-pole or wooden pole structures that we see associated with those lower voltage lines are about 70 feet tall, and the easements for them are on the order of around 100 feet. So this particular technology, which actually is old, invented in their late 60s, it's not a hot new thing, requires an easement on the order of 250 feet.
Wide.
Wide, that's correct. So 125 feet from the center line in both directions.
The new ones require 250.
That's correct.
Which is almost a football field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. There are many factors here, but one of the first things that jumped out at me is when I went on the satellite imagery to look at my neighbors and their properties and in town of Stark, it was very evident that a lot of dwellings, homes included, were built very, very close to the transmission line was built very, very close to these dwellings. Like, I think the study that I did, I looked at only at dwellings that were within 500 feet of the existing transmission line, but I found that 38 of those dwellings existed just in my area, and the average distance was 211 feet, but 14 of those dwellings were actually within 140 feet, some of them down as close as 30 feet. So this, you know, this scale of infrastructure with a lot of impacts that we can talk about, it is just, it's hard for someone to even imagine in these areas where, you know, houses are tucked away and privacy is important and those kinds of things. So,
right. When we drive to Minneapolis and we go through Rochester, mm-hmm. Highway 52, there's some kind of big poles there. Are they bigger than those?
Those poles there are associated with 345,000 volts of electricity, or 345 kV.
It's like half.
Utility jargon. Roughly half the voltage. But the amount of power that these bulk systems, the 765s carry, are six times more, greater than the 345s. About 24 times, roughly, the power that's on the existing lines that we have running through our area right now.
So sometimes people talk about, say, oh, you mean like those ones in Minnesota? I said, no, I think they're bigger.
No, like the ones, the right? closest people might be familiar with them is if you take the trip on Interstate 55 through central Illinois. At some point, you'll come across a cluster of lattice tower structures that will be carrying the super high voltage. And you might know it when you're there that those systems often carry two or three transmission lines in in the same corridor. So they're like really, like this level of transmission is truly an unprecedented mega level of expansion in the energy market that we have never, has never been proposed, extraordinarily expensive, much different, much more complicated environmental impacts and all of that kind of stuff than anything we've seen before. So if I were a policymaker in Wisconsin, I would really see this as, whoa, let's slow down. Let's look at this new concept of expanding our, you know, electrical grid in Wisconsin and and look at, you know, we don't have laws on the books that say, well, what kind, how wide should these corridors be? What kind of vegetation management? What kinds of issues are we going to be looking at with wildlife and stuff like that? And let's slow down.
Migration, you know, because the amount of energy and power that are coming out of these lines are, for sure the animals are feeling it. You know,
a lot of solid evidence that the animals are not only feeling it in terms of electromagnetic things, if they're sensitive to that, but also they're seeing it in the form of what's called corona discharge. I'll talk, elaborate on that a bit. And then also there's audio pollution from the from the extremely high voltage. So basically what it is that farmers have told me, and I've witnessed it myself, that, you know, on humid conditions, in human conditions, they hear the transmission lines buzzing and making hums and stuff like that. And it's, you know, pretty noticeable. But the level of voltage here, 20, I mean, all of these artifacts, if you will, are a function of the amount of power that is being, you know, the energy, literally, the amount of power that's being carried through the conductors. And so when you increase the amount of power on the order of 24 times the amount that's there now, then, for example, just get into some of the health-related things, corona discharge visual part is been studied pretty extensively and known to have impacts on animals. Basically, they can see this light. Humanized are designed so that our corneas absorb the ultraviolet light, but a lot of animals don't.
So when we're saying, just so I can understand, corona discharge,
It's actually, it's visual and auditory, but it's actually the air. It's actually the electrons from the amount of energy that's in the electric wires literally discharging or conducting into the air.
Okay.
And so when there's high humidity, there's a greater rate of discharge. And visually, for example, you can see sparking. In fact, here's some of the terminology you can see this glowing around the conductors and sparks. And when the humidity is high enough, you can actually, the entire conductor illuminates. It has a glow around it. And there's a photograph there at one of the...
So if these things were underwater, you would see stuff...
Well, it wouldn't be underwater because water conducts electricity. That would it wouldn't last very long.
That's what I mean. But the electric, you could see it. See it all over. Yeah,
that's right. So the amount of discharge into the air increases with the more moisture that there is in the air. That's the phenomenon.
So, like, sometimes even in, just to bring this down to scale of like being in a town, sometimes you hear things humming.
Right.
Right. Those are the pollinators. Sure. Yeah. As a kid, you're like, oh, those are humming. And you just kind of get used to that really low level noise. Well, it doesn't happen that often, but maybe on a hot day. So you're saying bigger lines make bigger hums.
So we should probably decide. I'm going to talk both about the audible part and the visual part.
Okay.
Let's talk about the visual part first.
Okay, we'll come back to humming.
I'm sorry, but
no, that's fine.
I mean, just to sum that up before I get into that.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are you know, 200 feet, up to 200 feet, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's 20 stories. You know, that's 20 stories. You imagine a building 20 stories high?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the building's bigger. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, my God, that thing's so huge.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going up that tall. And compared to the highest before was like 70
feet.
Mm-hmm. 70 feet, which is only 7 stories.
3 times higher, for sure.
Yeah, it's just insane.
So they'd be very visible on top of tree lines around 70 feet above ground level and when it goes over hills. So it would extend above the hillscapes, and it would be cut a corridor that's as you say almost the width of a football field, and
the width, the length of a football field.
So you see all the vegetation.
Yeah, you just got one big gap. If you took that through any forest around here, and you took a whole football field wide, and just mowed it right down, because that's what they're going to do, right?
Yeah. And we have like. Some of the, if you look at the satellite imagery, and we have in the landowner workshops and stuff, that we can make available for people. The people have built these houses or vice versa, like where they have a, you know, 50, 70 feet of trees and stuff in, that are blocking the view, and, you know, good part of their parcel that's in woodland and stuff that would be just completely
because they would be going in the existing,
if they follow,
but make
the
it wider, 130 feet wider or whatever.
Wow. While we're on that note, so a lot of the landowners, myself included, were concerned about the fact that the developer, in this case Dairyland, has not really reached out to any of these potentially impacted people and said, well, this would be a fairly big deal. So the landowners have written letters to Dairyland and said, we need detailed maps of where you think the existing facility is and the extent of that easement and where would you like to put the new one and stuff, because it would be a profound, profound change of their asset, their personal assets.
Right.
But Dairyland so far is not responding to those requests. They're not even acknowledging receiving the requests or that they have infrastructure on their property. So this is a special concern because the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin expects the developers to work with the landowners and resolve these issues before they submit their application to the Public Service Commission. In Badger Coulee, the period of time that landowners had to both learn about the project initially, and I will admit, adjust emotionally to it and know exactly what their powers are, was till the point that the application was submitted was 3 years. So we had a learning, some time for the learning curve. Dairyland has said verbally and in some written statements that they would like to submit their application for this unprecedented proposal in as early as just this July. So instead of having 3 years to absorb and respond and work with the landowners, we have 7 to 10 months, and to date, unresponsiveness. So this is why this is one of the big issues right now.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, that's a big issue. That is.
And they're by law supposed to respond. Is that correct?
Well, by
or courtesy.
A lot of the laws that we have today, the people are not aware of this, are essentially become. The teeth of them have been removed from deregulation. And in Wisconsin, our energy laws went through that process around the turn of the century. And a lot of, for example, you would think like, okay, the PSC expects you to work with the landowners and do all this. And so you would say, okay, the first step is you do this. The second step, you do this. So you have a stated, quantified, measurable progress towards a goal. No. All that I'm aware of, and I'm not a lawyer, but have, you know, been in some proceedings and stuff, is that all we have as consumers and landowners is this phrase, work with.
Work yeah. with.
So, undefined work with.
Work with.
Well, we're going to tell them when we get it done, or we're going to tell them, we're coming in tomorrow, you know, we're coming in to chop all your trees down tomorrow.
Yeah, that's huge.
You need to
that
work with
huge,
that.
That's huge, right?
But I just want, before we digress too much, I want to just list some of these. So this corona discharge, which is a substantial, like it can cause the whole line to glow literally violet to our eyes, right? Under high humidity conditions, it can spark and it makes a lot of sounds and stuff like that. There are a number of studies here that I'm reading, but I'll just read you a little bit from this one. This is the avoidance by mammals and ground nesting birds of habitat up to several kilometers away from high voltage power lines is a major consequence of infrastructural development in remote areas. Several kilometers, this can be seen. Moreover, the avoidance of the animals and seeing this may persist over 3 decades after construction. Ultraviolet light discharges on power lines occur both as standing corona, which is like that glow, along cables and as irregular flashes on the insulators. Birds, rodents, and other animals, I'll list them, birds, raptors, bees, cows, pigs, sheep, mice, rats, dogs, cats, ferrets, rabbits, mouse deer, squirrels, prairie dogs, and trout do not have the corona, the cornea design that we have, so they see this ultraviolet radiation much more prominently than we do. People have asked about white-tailed deer. There is evidence that white-tailed deer also have much more sensitivity to UV light, but I have not come across a study that really examines that phenomenon. So here's an interesting statement here. It says, the result of the study is we suggest that in darkness, these animals see power lines not as a dim, passive structure, but rather as lines of flickering lights stretching across the terrain.
Hence why they avoid it.
Yeah, so they
That's
just...
That's why animals...
I mean, they almost feel it. But this is one thing, too. The beauty about being on WDRT, you have no glow. You just got the glow of the heart, the glow of the mind. You don't have any
I'm
of this
feeling your glow.
Sidekick.
I'm
you don't,
feeling
you
it.
Don't need glasses, nothing.
I'm okay.
We got nothing but love coming across the airwaves.
All right. If you're just joining us, Rob Danielson is our guest today. You know, he's a potentially impacted landowner in the town of Stark if these mega 765 transmission lines come to fruition, which that's the whole point of this conversation, is like we didn't even know it was happening, all of a sudden it might be happening. And so he's here with us today to share that information. Rob, is someone wanted to reach out to you, I forgot to ask you, is there an email or something that people
sure.
can reach out to you at?
Sure. The email for the opposition effort is no765line@gmail.com. So no spaces.
Oh, that's simple.
no765line@gmail.com.
Great.
Well,
okay.
And so. to fit into this, well, why do you have this on the show? Because we're a wellness show. We're, you know, the heart of wellness. Well, it is in the heart. It's the heart of our life living in this area, and along with anybody in the world. And to really step back, take a look, and saying, what are we doing to ourselves and humans? These animals can feel it. And not just the ones that can see it, they can feel it. You know, and so that vibration, how is that affecting them? How is it affecting our own kids, our own brains, our own bodies? You know, it's we're obsessed. We're obsessed with the electricity, and we got to take a look at that.
Right.
We're,
environmental
we're a bunch
wellness.
Of drunken sailors walking around with their phones
so maybe we
got to look at ourselves. Not only this.
Well, we definitely do not need the expanded utility to do what we need to do. Actually, here in Vernon County, in the Vernon Electric Cooperative, we're making very, very fast strides in the development of solar and battery storage and things like that. We also have a very proactive energy efficiency appetite here. There's no, in my personal opinion, after studying all of this expansion planning for all these years, there's really no need to expand our existing system. It's not cost effective. It doesn't really accomplish anything other than, in my personal opinion, utilities don't make money by selling power. They make money by putting steel in the ground. And this is, they get guaranteed return on their investments on the order of 9 to 11% per year.
Paid for by the taxes, right?
No. This is all out of your electric bill. Mm-hmm. Until we understand societally, locally, and our local governments and our county governments, and especially our state lawmakers understand that. This is the main motive for this expansion is not to effectively reduce CO2 emissions, not to effectively, our system more reliable or to remove congestion. But the main driver of this is that you make a lot of money by putting utility steel in the ground. It's the only industry that I know of, the railroad industry, that has a guaranteed return. So you have big investors like BlackRock, right? A very large private equity firm. These guys are really into this utility expansion, guaranteed return money. And that's really what's driving it.
So to try to understand that from my brain, so you're saying putting steel in the ground, meaning building bigger towers, makes money for somebody's that makes money for them. Not you're not even saying from the energy it produces, but just from the act of putting it in the ground?
That's right. It's like an
Let's
investment.
Just go build something.
Yeah. Well, that's because they – well, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission establishes what that return rate will be. And that's not just for – it's for all power plants. No matter what type of power plant it is, that guaranteed return is there in all of the transmission lines. So it's a it's part of this thing. We hear, oh, data centers, big build-out and all that stuff. If you read those stories carefully, you will note, look at, when you read something about a utility expansion thing, look at who wrote that, not just the writer of the paper, but who's quoted in there. If you find an article in there that actually is cites a utility in there, that's very, very rare. Most of these stories are written by PR agents and stuff for these players in the finance industry, even some of our environmental groups who would get monetary return or have an investment. And, you know, they really like to see the public thinking that, oh, the sky is falling, the grid is crumbling, you know, we're going to need all of this stuff happening and we're going to go back into the dark ages.
Right. So this is my question, if you can help me understand it, and maybe some listeners. So if you're okay with this, like, we're living our life. Mm-hmm. It's 2000.
Right.
Then more of these little things start to be created, phones and laptops and bigger computers. And so all this happening, that did demand a little more energy?
No.
No. Okay, so here's the confusion. I'm thinking.
No, actually, in 2024, we used 3% less power than we did in 2004, which is when the Public Service Commission said, oh, my gosh, you know, the skies, we're going to need a lot more generation, we're going to need a lot more transmission. And their estimates, when we joined this electricity market, which is the bigger picture, the planning is all done by the utilities in this special environment that they create that does not have any mandates by the states, does not have any mandates by the federal government. They just create their own. Well, I refer to them as Christmas lists because that's the capital. That's where they say, we want to build this, we want to build this, we want to connect this, we want to connect this. And then they all get together and battle it out, and then they come up with a plan. But basically, our electricity use and our demand, which is like the summer peak, air conditioners are on, maximum transmission moment, those have all decreased. So the market said, oh, we're going to expand and we're going to grow because all of this need is coming, but it did not materialize.
Wow.
And that evidence is very clearly spelled out in the reports that the utilities have filed with the federal government and with the state government. It's nothing opinion. I have no.
So this is literally just like a bunch of BS, in a sense. Like, meaning, like, so my...
It's the power of public relations.
Yeah, so my thought on this, like, oh, they're going to need it all for these data center things,
right.
Which I don't know what that even means. I don't know why they're needing to be developed. What, like, that's the mystery to me in my brain.
This is a perfect example, because
I've
studied that.
I'm just confused about that.
Because I guess if I got, you know, a quarter for every email I got about a data center, I'd be a rich man. And that shows the effectiveness of the PR outreach that's going on and the amount of money that's going into that PR. But in the two, for example, I tracked down citations for how much more power would these data centers require? How much more transmission would these data centers require? And one of the estimates said, well, it would be roughly the amount electricity needed roughly for the city proper of Milwaukee, right? But that's like 2.5% of Wisconsin's electricity demand. We can easily accommodate that much generation because we did do all of this building out because of all of the Public Service Commission
back
and
in
utilities
2004,
planning. They said, oh, the market's coming. We got to grow like heck. For the overbuilding, and you should, the map of seeing what the transmission system was like in 2005 and comparing to that what it is today, already built and in the ground, is just breathtaking. But basically, we have extended our capacity for transmission around 7,000 megawatts pretty free and clear. The planning for these data centers are saying that would be maybe increase it 2,000 megawatts. So I guess the PR, look at the PR and say, why is there so much PR if this is so self-evident?
Yeah, you wouldn't need it. The,
yeah, that's right. Okay. So like months ago, I was driving.
People's phones wouldn't be working. Their lights would be going out. You know, like
and that's another fallacy is that Wisconsin has an extraordinary sense of self-imposed frugality and efficiency. There are only 10 states in the United States that uses less power per residential household than Wisconsin. And of all of those 10 states, they all put almost four times as much money into incentives for efficiency, solar, battery storage, you know, all actually home energy monitoring is a really big deal. Now you can eliminate a lot of your electric bill by just simply seeing what your electricity use is. Like, whoops, I forgot to turn off the pump. Whoops, I forgot to turn off the fans.
You should do that.
But there's for example, the Vernon County Energy District gave out a bunch of energy monitoring tools. And the reports that I haven't seen the final conclusive reports, but that experiment showed that there is a lot of appetite. The amount of energy that those households who could had those smart tools to be able to look at that evidence, they reduced their electricity energy use by a lot.
Wow.
And they also were encouraged then to make, from seeing that happen, they also moved forward with some new appliances and things like that, which could continue to drop that down. But the best way to look at it as a consumer at home or a health person is to say, well, you know, there's two ways basically that we can go forward. We built this huge, expansive system that, and our energy use is absolutely flat, our demand is flat. Data centers, okay, let the chips lie. We can accommodate those. But there's really just a question before us is, are we going to spend our precious energy dollars, which are huge for a lot of households right now, are we going to spend more of those dollars toward expanding this system? And this is the basic premise. It's called Midwest Expansion Transmission Planning. It's literally the name of it, Midwest Expansion Transmission Planning. It's not energy planning. It's transmission expansion planning. Either we're going to expand the system or we're going to put whatever dollars we can scrape up into improving our homes and our farms and our businesses to being able to become more self-sufficient. I have a system at home right now with a backup battery system that I've had to replace. That alone is enough for me to run my house on stored solar power overnight. Because I've reduced the amount of energy that I have used around 70%, right, over the last 10 years from not doing stupid stuff, from paying attention to what was going on and turning stuff off using timers. This is where we are right now in terms of our young people can't buy houses. They can't even afford apartments and stuff. They have no equity in anything, right? But today, a person can get equity in solar, get equity in energy efficiency improvements and things like that. And those will return dollars to you at a higher rate than you would get if you had them in the stock market. But this is not like a not well enough known. These powers, because of the PR blanket, is filling our email boxes, or subscriptions to environmental groups and stuff with all of this stuff about expansion on such a regular basis that we truly think that we're deprived.
Right.
And in reality, the utilities are doing very well. We're deprived because none of the dollars are coming to us to make the sensible investments that would truly provide reliability, minimize these solar farms that are anywhere from 4 to 13 square miles, have the topsoil completely removed. It's when they build them, they just scrape off the topsoil, then they grade it down to so that it's flat and that those long, axes, things that rotate and stuff, and then they pile it up in the corner. Right. And then they build the construction. And at the end, they say, well, we're going to scrape this stuff back around these thousands of poles that we put in the ground. And we're going to call it this is all under a, quote, farming permit. So, the extent of the land impacts, are not not appreciated enough, in my opinion.
Would this be something like people say, oh, silver and gold, you know, this is going up. Investing in mining, you know, is this...
like we used to think in the North Woods. Yeah, like, yeah. Don't mine here.
You know, is this electrical... These guys are a company saying, well, let's go there. We don't really need any more electricity, but there's money in mining electricity. You know, like, so these...
Oh, an extraction model.
Yeah, yeah. So these guys are the electrical companies or whoever's making the money here, BlackRock, who's investing in them. It's automatic. It's like the price
that's what
of,
they
the
do
price
for
of electricity can go up and down. But the actual construction of it is even paid for, right?
That's right.
Guaranteed money, it's going to be paid for.
That's right.
Through the electrical... it's part of the cost, right?
Power plant costs and transmission costs in our electric bills are somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% to 60%. And that's for the existing debt, the existing loans, high-interest loans that have been taken out over a long period of time that we will pay for no matter what. We're conscribed to when a public service commission approves a project, power plant, we get, you know, we become the indebtors. So we pay that out, and right now we're like 2021 to 2023, the revenue to Wisconsin utilities increased at the clip of 6% per year. If that continues at that rate, which is probably hopefully at the high end, but if it continues at that rate for the next 40 years, or 20 years, a person with a $150 a month electric bill would be looking at electric bills short of $500 a month.
So the local people who live here, our bills might go up if they put these lines
in. Yes, all utility, that's another thing is important.
They have
to
pay for it.
All of this debt, whether it's in our debt that we incur from having transmission or power plants here in our county and those in other states and other counties, all of that debt is basically massed together. We all pay a share of that debt. In fact, it's that share of the debt that is really concerning because... if some utilities, for example, are getting smart, co-ops and stuff are saying like, "Hey, let's use this home solar. Let's use these things that reduce peak demand, right? And that will reduce our share of this huge debt pool that's out there."
Oh, wow!
So there's lots of angles about this. There's lots of ways that we know we can, like you pointed to earlier in the poll, go for a good future. Do some good, educate ourselves and go for, you know, the path that will really be compatible with our dependency on the land and our local economies and things like that and not be sacrificing our most precious assets.
Is electrical a public company? Is it public?
Dairyland is a cooperative. It's not a regulated utility.
But most of them are publicly traded.
Free Energies, MG&E, and all those guys.
So and here's their gig. They are the board of that company is obligated to make money for more money for their investors. So it's like, electricity's kind of leveled off. What are we going to do? Well, let's build some more. Let's expand because then we can put that over time. The customers will pay it. They might not even notice it, you know, the bill goes up.
I'm getting really mad about this right now. I'm getting really mad. I just didn't understand to this level. And thank you for being here. I'm just really, really annoyed that we're being just basically screwed over.
We've been manipulated. There's no doubt. There's
the publicity is very good.
You know, months ago,
and
I was driving...
a long time ago, right?
Months ago, I was driving from Milwaukee. My family lives over there, and there's all these ads about all the jobs for the data centers, and all these ads were being pushed about, like, this is really great. This is really amazing. There's going to be great jobs. Da, 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 da. And I was like, "Why? What is a data center? Why? What does this even mean?" Like you're saying, it's like this smokescreen something.
There's a good amount of people that are upset about the data centers. Community near Waukesha, Wanakee just kicked it off. Just said it's not on our interest. We're not go away developers.
Well, good.
And then there's a protest for the transmission line in Washington County, Ozaukee County, really, and the data center there is like very serious opposition there. For lots of reasons. I want to go back to one thing that Paul touched upon. It's important that we understand that here in the area of the Dairyland Service Territory. is that unlike what's called an IOU, an investor-owned utility that Paul was referring to, where the guaranteed return is there on the capital investments and so forth, to the best of my knowledge, cooperatives don't qualify for that guaranteed return. Mm. So then you say, well, here's the board. What's the cooperative? And the board members of the cooperative are made up of representatives from our distribution co-ops, like Vernon Electric, like Scenic Rivers, like Richland Center, and so forth. Those people go forth and make decisions for Dairyland, which is a wholesale supplier of electricity. They're in the electricity market. But the question that I have, and I would really like to get some good answers for this, is that why is it that a cooperative, which is not motivated with the same profit motives that we've talked about, why are they not only saying we want to be part of this build-out, but we want to utilize the service territory that is land-supported by landowners who are customers of our
co-op
or the distribution segments of those? Why is this entity joining together with another out-of-state merchant power plant builder, NextEra Energy, which isn't even in Wisconsin? Why are they merging together to propose going across the heart of their service territory, which is no real teeny existing transmission lines, no interstates? Most of the big structures that you see for 345s and stuff are all along, you know, existing utility corridors. So that's a question that I really have for Dairyland.
It makes no sense, right?
It's like, why? What's going on here? Why? Because it's one thing, and if they were to say, like, gosh, you know, like, this is really, really important, we have to do this to save the planet or whatever, then why wouldn't they just go to these impacted landowners and to these communities and electric customers and say, we're really, really sorry. We're going to do everything we possibly can to minimize the impacts on you. We're going to work with you. Like up in Eau Claire, when XL Energy did their open houses for the landowners, when you came in, you were funneled off to a set of video monitors and a whole lineup of staff members. If you were an existing landowner, they showed you where's the existing line on your property right now, where would this new one be? And then they set up meetings, printed out the maps for people to take home, and then they set up meetings to work with these landowners and resolve the issues. I personally spoke with two of these landowners who were extraordinarily upset, but also somewhat relieved, at least to know that the utility was reaching out to them. We haven't received any such information, and even when the landowners request it, they won't even acknowledge receiving it.
That's so weird.
So I'm really baffled by the radio silence of this developer and the
radio silence no more. WDRT is speaking out. You got, and this is like a bully move. Right? A bully move from the big,
it's
the
quiet.
Big dog.
It's a quiet
PR.
It's under the radar move, you know.
It's a smooth move somewhere under there. And WDRT does no smooth movement. It is purely public. It's this.
We're too awkward.
We're out in the open. We're almost naked. We can be actually naked in this room because it's radio.
We are.
Put your clothes on, Dan.
Jeepers, Dan.
It's hot here.
WDRT. If you're just tuning in, this is the Heart of Wellness show, and we have Rob Danielson as our guest. He is a potentially impacted landowner in the town of Stark with that potential 765 transmission line, which we are potentially hoping it doesn't happen.
And keeping the potential to a minimum.
Yes, and if you want to reach out to Rob with any questions, you can go to the email no765line@gmail.com. no765line@gmail.com. Rob, you should tell us, this hour is so exciting, this is how fast it goes, isn't it? But I want to make sure that our listeners know that while they're listening to this great show right now, you can literally drive right over right now
and go to a meeting in Gaze Mills.
That's right.
That starts at 1 o'clock today.
Well, it starts 1 o'clock. But for the viewers listening to this after the fact, is you can send an email to that. In fact, let me give you another address here that has a lot of information that the listeners can check out. So the string is the regular https://, which you can probably ignore, and just type in bit.ly/765links.
Links?
L-I-N-K-S. So bit.ly/765 and then the strings L-I-N-K-S.
Okay.
And that will give you a whole bunch of links that are associated with documents that will probably include the videotape of the... We have incredible people, speakers coming down. We have a person who's a specialist in property value impacts. We have a lawyer team that's coming down who specializes in rights that landowners have. We have Dina Kurt from Grant County who's going to be talking about the travails of the Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line crossing through the Upper Mississippi National Wildlife Refuge, which would also be duplicated here at Genoa. And I'm going to give it a little talk as well. But I encourage people to check out that link and look at those resources, get on the email list and stuff. And there's a lot of stuff because of this compressed timetable that Dairyland has us on. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on this spring that wasn't on the calendar when we were planning our year.
So they're obviously pushing it for some reason, right? I mean, there's...
And it's so interesting. It's like, I feel like, you know, like in a movie, someone's like tied up in a chair with a gun to their head or they're gagged or something. They can't say anything. And they should be actually talking and explaining it, but they can't. It feels like it's a can't thing. But what would it be?
Well,
it's so weird. Mystery.
When most commercial enterprises that don't publicize what they're, I mean, this is a cooperative, but we'll call it an entity, an initiative. When they don't publicize what they're doing, then they might feel that they don't have anything to gain from that publicity. And I'm just a regular guy. I've observed these proposals coming through and stuff, but that's the indication that I'm getting is that they being the developers. And there's another section that would continue from, I can't forget to omit this, there'd be another segment of this facility that would go across Richland County, Sauk County, and Columbia County, and actually continue from there all the way down to the southern Wisconsin border. So this literally would impact. We're just the first canary, if you will, of this whole project.
First county.
The developer from, we call it west of Bell Center, is the Genoa to Bell Center. It's a 161 kV line that goes kind of south-southeast out of Genoa, and then goes due east at Seneca Corners there, goes to Bell Center, which is about a couple of miles south of Gaze Mills.
These are big 70, 80-foot lines too, right?
This is following the existing 161 kV line that would go from, you know, and then from that point it would go at choose some corridor, an existing. The reason that I call myself a potentially impacted landowner in the town of Stark is that state law requires the developer, in this case, to not only provide, follow existing transmission lines, and if you draw a line between Genoa and Portage, right, that the lines going through the town of Stark, Webster, and those things are right in a direct path. Dairyland has specifically said they would like to follow just this existing transmission line, but the Public Service Commission application procedures requires them to also provide a viable, you know, discuss a viable alternative. So just in the elimination of that discussion about the alternative got me concerned because... That's not what law says, and if you draw a straight line. So, any rate,
okay, we
haven't talked about the regional utilities, and but we have talked about the capital investment incentives that are behind it, and I think that's the core of it that listeners.
That's what you're saying. The capital investment incentives behind this are the what you said, like they want to put steel in the ground.
Largely guaranteed return.
Right. It's just like, oh, let's make money off
it. Except for Dairyland. We don't understand. Why? What's in it for you?
Right.
Well, it's, and this supposedly is coming from where? North Dakota wind?
Okay. That's a great idea. Oh. First of all, one simple phrase. Electricity is not water plumbing. It doesn't go from point A to point B. It's a web. It's a giant web of lines and the electrons flowing in all ways. Some strands of the web are thicker and can carry more electrons. Some are thinner and so forth. But most of the power that we receive in our homes and stuff is going through what we call network transmission lines, those smaller ones that are literally in our counties that we're talking about right now. The expansion concept was the idea that, whoa, we're going to build a lot of remote wind power plants and solar power plants and, oh, by the way, a lot of natural gas power plants and put all of those things out there. And then, therefore, the market will expand. We'll be able to sell and trade our power outside of the Midwest, and this will be the future. The expansion, fundamental expansion model. Energy use is flat. Demand is flat. Actually, the use of the actual hubs where the energy is transferred and stuff, to the best of my reading of the data, is down, peaked in 2008. So it's really this paradigm that worked really well. You put pictures of wind turbines in people's heads, and then you say the East Coast doesn't have those wind turbines, and all of a sudden people can, oh, I can plumb that. But to answer your question is that these transmission lines, if you look at the economic benefits from them and the projections that are all basically proportional to the amount of renewable energy, because they say it's going to save us money because wind has no fuel costs. We're talking about for Cardinal Hickory Creek, under the best case scenario, if you take their best example, we, an electric residential electric customer in Wisconsin, would potentially save 4 cents per month from building a $628 million transmission.
You'd save way more if you just got every house efficient.
Yeah, right. You just eliminate the demand. That's that thing. I would say we have a choice societally that we're going to say, we need to keep expanding, by George, and make sure that BlackRock does really well. Or we're going to look at the farmers and our neighbors and our habitats and the lands and the birds that can't speak for themselves, right? And we're going to focus on this part, our survival and our health and our happiness is dependent upon. That's the reason that I go outside every day and I see the world around me and I hear the world around me and I know, okay, mm-hmm. I know what my goal, I know what I need, I know this preciousness that is given to me to be a short-term stakeholder in, and that's all. Then I go forth and I sleep well at night because I was busy, busy talking.
You are the Lorax, really. You are the Lorax, and you're speaking for the trees and the animals and your neighbors, and you really are the Lorax. You're like, what are you doing? I mean, this is a classic thing. Someone wants to make a bunch of money and doesn't give a crap about anybody else's world because they're not sitting. They probably live in a big mansion on top of a mountain.
Their land, their vacation.
But they're probably – they're not sitting under a noisy power line or a – it's so frustrating.
But the cities – I mean, the idea that, you know, this – thing that's going on with the data centers and the idea that, oh, by the way, BlackRock could be one of the investors in this project, and they would literally be investing and owning and profiting from building a transmission line
to their own data center.
To their own energy hog. Like,
isn't there something else they can be doing, right?
Yes, there is. For one thing, When you're looking at a proposal and the developer doesn't want to talk about it, then I think you know what you do at that point. You ask a lot of questions. You say, wait a minute, I don't understand. You know, you're asking for me to sacrifice my land. You're asking for me to sacrifice my local economy. You're looking for me to accept the imposition of this technology on the living world. Yeah. And you don't want to even talk about to the landowners about what would happen on their land. I don't understand this. I really don't.
I don't either.
And so I'm not pointing fingers or whatever, but it's just the amount of questions that are out there.
Yeah.
are
And you really would like to have
so
them
when there's
answered.
You know, when there is radio silence, you turn up the volume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, that's what people do is they talk things through. That's what we should be doing.
So how much intimate domain is eminent domain in electricity is there? I mean, how much power do they have to pull that?
Once the PSC approves the project, they can, if necessary, exercise eminent domain.
So in the PSC...
And two of the lawyers that will be on that recording by the time this is aired will be discussing that.
Public Service Commission, and that's the people sitting in Madison, the Public Service Commission?
The commissioners are the folks who make the decisions, that's right.
And those are appointed people on the commissioner board or something?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're appointed people.
But they're voted Congress or no?
No, this is right in the state of Wisconsin.
The governors appoint them for six-year terms, if I'm not mistaken, six-year terms.
So they're they're not voted, okay.
But it seems like those are the folks that need to be getting their ears talked to a little bit.
Absolutely, and our lawmakers to put some teeth back in our energy laws. It's like the term work with is not sufficient to define a life-changing decision for a landowner.
It should be approved by the public. You know, like instead of like work
Land
with.
Or do what representational government does, and that is that the people speak and the lawmakers represent what the people want to be, want the policy that they want to see in place.
Appointed for 6 years, they said, on that Public Service Commission for 6 years. Okay. Well, those are folks to look up. I looked them up once when this was being, we went to the Westby meeting, and, you know, and I was like, well, who's really in charge of making these decisions?
And there are some meetings coming up on the 10th and the 12th, the next round of open houses.
In March?
In March.
In Madison?
No. In Dairyland is doing two more open houses, and we're hoping that they will show up with all their video monitors and all this information.
Right, it'd be nice to y'all.
And,
right.
And you know, respond to what the landowners need to know. One of them is at the Sportsman's Retreat. I don't know.
Sportsman's Retreat. 11.
That's like down. Oh my gosh! Is
by
that
Avalanche?
DeSoto? Yeah. No, by DeSoto in Crawford County.
Okay.
And then there's the other one is in Gays Mills at the Community Center, which is I think on the 12th.
Okay.
And that'd be 11 to 1 or 11 to 2, and then 4 to 7.
Okay.
So I would point out, though, that if you do go to these things and you're concerned about your ideas being influential, that the way that it's set up is anything that you put in writing will be included in the record and will go to the Public Service Commission.
So, right.
But those chats that you have with people and stuff like that,
nothing.
That you may like that or not like that or whatever, but that will your ideas will not be transferred into a public record.
So sit down
verbal.
And take the time to write.
I would bring it in writing. If you, for example, let's say you're a landowner that has not received any response or whatever, this is another opportunity for you to recreate a record of not getting that response and stuff. So it's important to understand, you know, the way that things are reviewed and evidence. Evidence is primarily stuff that's either written or visual. It's not stuff that's said.
Okay.
Is there any positive history to show that people rising up, like you are leading right now,
17 times the United States expansion transmission lines have been defeated.
17 times. Let's go, people.
And 18. We're going for 18. Cardinal Hickory Creek should have been 18.
Okay, and they didn't happen. Well, thank you, Rob, so much. Our hour has ended. I knew it'd fly by. Well, almost ended, but close. So, again, folks, you can go to no765line@gmail.com or... this website, bit.ly/765links, L-I-N-K-S. And I'll say that again, bit.ly/765links to find all this information about meetings and so much good stuff. So thank you, Rob. Really appreciate your time on this. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You got a 30-second...
Goodbye
that you wanted
to the people.
I just think it's a pleasure to be here with you today to have this open discussion, and I encourage everyone to learn everything that they possibly can. There's no such thing as too much information. This stuff is not overly complicated if you really sit down and buckle it. There will be opportunities down the road for people to exercise their rights, and I am very hopeful that this will be a turning point in this whole expansion fallacy, And if it can't happen in the Kickapoogian area, it can't happen anywhere.
That's right. Let's do
and
it.
There's a petition to be signed, too. That there's matters.
Support the landowners.
Support the landowners. So thank you so much again, and thank you for listening today. Have a great day.